Quad Radio Network is pleased to present Encounter, a public service program here on KSIV that spotlights local Christian events and provides information and resources to enrich your lives. And now, your Encounter host, Judy Redlich.
We're going to talk about education today. Around our country, in Missouri, where do scores rank with children with reading in Missouri? And more. I am so pleased that Brenda Talent is my guest today, and she's the Chief Executive Officer of Show Me Institute. Brenda, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You've been at the Institute for a long time, and tell us about it. What should people know about the Institute and what you do?
We're a research and education organization. We're a public charity supported by individuals who support what we're doing. We research from a fiscal and economic perspective policies in Missouri. And we're really looking at how can we help Missourians prosper? What are the best free market policies that our state should put in place? And you can go to our website, showmeinstitute.org. You can see all the different categories of policies that we look at. But we root our policy recommendations in research. You know, it's not what Brenda Talent thinks. Mm-hmm. It's what our research shows from an economic perspective. And then from that, we talk about the policy. So we like to say we engage in facts and fair argument as we make proposals for Missouri that we think will help prosper our state.
So what is a free market policy?
Well, you know, you're familiar with Milton Friedman, right? And the notion is that we really should have government get involved only when there's what's called a market failure. And the easy example is pollution, right? Because people will not police themselves. The incentives are wrong. So that's an argument where government should get involved. But we believe that in many areas, whether it's earning a living, whether it's education, whether it's tax and regulatory policy, that oftentimes government needs to get out of the way and let individuals exercise their liberty and freedom in order to engage in that marketplace. And, you know, it's not only a marketplace of goods, but it's a marketplace of ideas.
How much do you think the Constitution has not been followed in helping people keep this free market policy available and there for people to use?
Well, you know, we talk a lot about federalism. In other words, that really the states are the laboratories of experiment, and we shouldn't have the federal government giving us a top-down, you know, this is what you need to do. And and what we have seen in the state of Missouri, and we've seen it across other states, is that when you're getting federal money, which, by the way, is taxpayer money, so we're sending money to the federal government, then the federal government's turning right around and sending back to us. But it has a lot of strings attached, and those strings are strings that the federal government has decided to impose upon us. And we think those strings, from a federalism standpoint, should be loosened, and we should allow the states to really engage again in that market competition. States are in competition with one another. I hate to say this, but we're sort of losing that competition.
Yeah, I see that with some of the ways that amendments are put on the ballots.
Well, that's just a process that in Missouri we've decided to allow people to have a voice. I do think that we need to step back from it because we have over 125 amendments to our Constitution.
Which is crazy.
Our Constitution looks more like a statute book rather than a Constitution because of that process.
Tell us about some of the initiatives that have helped the Institute really be out there.
Well, since our creation and the organization was formed in 2004, we've talked about two areas. We've talked about multiple areas, but two areas have consistently gone through our work. And one is about tax and regulatory relief, reducing taxes on income, allowing individuals to keep more of what they've earned. The other is educational choice, really expanding the ability of parents to control the education of their children. In addition to that, we talk a lot about government transparency, government accountability, healthcare issues, property rights, and just recently we've got involved in talking about energy. And again, all from the perspective of how can we use the market to help us prosper in these areas.
That's so important. How can we use the market? So tell us about some of the initiatives. You've mentioned about six of them already. What about government transparency. Are we at a good level of that in Missouri?
We'd argue that we need a lot more. There are some efforts afoot. We have some portals at the treasurer's office, at the office of administration, where, for example, municipalities can post their expenditure information, but it's not required. So there are some counties like St. Louis County that voluntarily put their information out on a website. School districts are supposed to provide this on a website, but the problem is that municipalities are not required to do that. And oftentimes, school districts are not what I would call really transparent in the information that they're providing. So we've seen other states be a lot more transparent, because how can you hold your government accountable unless you know what they're doing? You know, we do have a law in Missouri, it's called the Sunshine Law, where individuals can request their government to provide information to them. But what we've seen with that is we've seen governments respond by saying, well, it's going to cost you. And one school district say $200,000 to provide this information. So, for example, we had a project where we were trying to find out, well, okay, what's the curriculum that you're using in your mm-hmm. school district? And does your curriculum use certain kinds of phrases, et cetera? And we did receive a number of them, and they were clearly cut and pasted from one another, because we got some from different districts which were identical with a huge dollar amount. And of course, no average citizen can do that. And you're thinking, well, why wouldn't you tell your parents what you're teaching in the classroom?
Well, according to the constitutional law, isn't there supposed to be a sunshine law that makes things available to the public?
I don't know that it's in the Constitution. We have a statutory requirement for sunshine laws. So it's really something that is developed through statute. And the law does provide that they could collect what's, quote, reasonable fees. But what you find is that some of those fees are not reasonable. And information which they should have readily available, they don't make readily available.
So what can parents do if they really want some sunshine law records to be exposed? And this is all over the United States, correct?
It varies from state to state. Some states are very transparent. Some make it available on websites so you can readily see what is going on. Again, it's almost a culture. You'd hate to have to say everything needs to be by a law, but in some states, it is required by law. And as I said, in Missouri, the information from municipalities is something that's voluntary. It's not required. They're asked to provide that information, and then the treasurer's office or the office administration makes that available. But again, there are some municipalities that are very transparent and they post that on their websites.
Okay, so let's talk about some tax stuff. You've been following some protocol in looking into that. Can you give us some insights?
Well, we talk a lot about reducing the income tax and certainly eliminating the earnings tax in St. Louis City and Kansas
City.
Yes,
that is a pain when you live in the city and you work in the city.
Well, or you work in the county and you work in the city.
And you work in the city, right.
And the problem is, and we've seen this, I mean, you can look at the declining population within the city. You get an automatic 1% pay increase if you just move from the city to the county. And in Kansas City, the Kansas City area is much larger, but you could cross the state line. So it really impacts economic growth. It is a negative on economic growth. And when you look at other states that have no income tax, like Tennessee, one of the cities that we look at is Nashville, and look at the growth there and the economic prosperity of those states and where they've gone as compared to our state, it's rather eye-opening. It's a pretty simple concept. When you tax something, you get less of it, right? So if we're taxing the production of income, we're discouraging work.
Yes, we are.
And so we would really like to see that the income tax in Missouri go to zero, so that we're not penalizing productive activity by our citizens.
So how has the Show Me Institute gone after this taxing?
Well, we've produced a lot of studies showing that, in fact, economic activity increases when you reduce taxes. But the other thing that has happened since our inception is the legislature has put in what we call triggers. So our income tax used to be 6%. It's now 4.7%. And what they did was they said that if revenues reach a certain amount, we'll reduce the income tax rate by 0.1%. And so that has been happening over the course of years as we hit certain revenue markers. But I would say one of the things we are talking about now, and it's available on our website, is called a Taxpayer Bill of Rights, where we really have seen Missouri government grow. I mean, it's almost doubled in size in the last 6 years when you look at their budget. I mean, we've gone from a budget of like $27 billion $30 billion up to over $50 billion in a few years. And we really need to begin restraining the growth of our government. And as a matter of fact, we're going to have to do so no matter what, because they're projecting revenues to be flat. But bottom line is, what we're proposing, call it a taxpayer bill of rights, to put what we call guardrails around the growth of government. So government can continue to provide the services providing, but if we absolutely want it to grow, we want the people to be able to vote on that. I don't know if you're familiar with the Hancock Amendment. That is a constitutional amendment we have that was enacted. And people thought that's going to restrain the growth of government. And if government gets too much revenue, they're going to give it back to the taxpayers as a refund. Well, Hancock isn't working that way anymore. And we have a paper out to show why it's no longer working.
That's amazing. It's not working anymore. So many of these amendments and laws are just not as effective as they used to be.
Unfortunately, that is true. And, you know, the intent was good, but because of some tinkering with our Constitution, some new definitions, we now have ways to avoid what the Hancock Amendment always contemplated, which was returning back to the people their revenue if government is growing too fast and getting too big.
So do you think it's because the legislators tack so much into something that's supposed to be finalized and passed rather than just make it one or two subjects?
Well, we talk a lot about that because obviously it's very easy for legislators to say, well, I voted for this bill because this was such a good thing, even though there's bad things in it. And we've seen in recent years what's called omnibus bills, where there's just multiple bills going on. But one of the other things I would say is that, and we've seen a lot of this, for example, Hancock in part has been undercut because our legislature likes to give away tax credits. And because of definitions in the Hancock provisions, tax credits don't count as revenue, but they actually are. We're giving a benefit to special interest groups. And that's one of the ways that our legislature is able to avoid the requirements of the Hancock Amendment.
I see. This is so interesting. Brenda, we would like you to come back and on our second segment, talk about education. You do some ranking on your website.
ShowMeInstitute.org.
.org. ShowMeInstitute.org. And you can find out a whole bunch more about some of the things we've talked about on that site. Brenda Talent is my guest. She is the Chief Executive Officer of the Show Me Institute right here in Missouri, doing a lot to change policy, doing a lot to bring things to people's attention. We're going to be back talking about education, so please stay tuned. I'm Judy Redlich. This is In Canada.
If you've listened to me at any time at all, or you've been friends with me, you know that I love to help people tell their story. Another thing I enjoy doing is helping people find their highest potential. If you're in a life's rut and you just can't figure out how to get past your stuck place, a life coach like me could help. Let me walk with you through your journey of transition. I'm a Christian life coach, and to find out more about my coaching, go to my coaching page at judyredlich.com or email me at jredlichspeaks@gmail.com.
I am so glad you're back because Brenda Talent and I are going to be talking about education. Are you wondering where are our kids in reading in Missouri? Well, Brenda Talent is the Chief Executive Officer of the Show Me Institute, and they have a website that ranks the schools in Missouri. So, Brenda, let's go into education a little bit.
All right. Well, we have a website. It's called MoSchoolRankings, all one word, .org, MoSchoolRankings.org, where what our policy experts did was they looked at all the data, and it comes from the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education here in Missouri, and put together information about every school and every school district in our state. It includes performance data and financial data. And you would say, well, why did you do this? Doesn't the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education do this? Well, they do, but not in a way that most people can easily understand. And it was very frustrating to us because 5 years ago, there is a federal law requiring that states provide what's called a report card to parents. And we went on the DESE site And we found information, but only someone who had an advanced degree in statistical analysis.
Oh, so nobody could understand what the information really meant.
Right. And so what we decided to do was, well, we put together a report card because other states have it. You could go to North Carolina or even Illinois, and you can see these very clear report cards that would give like a letter grade or a star ranking to their different schools and school districts. Well, we don't have that, so we created it, and that's what we have on our website. As I say, we have 5 years of data because we kept thinking, oh, once we show the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education how easy this is, they can do it. They've made their data a little bit better, but it's still very hard to understand, and they do not rank their schools. We give them a letter grade.
Why don't they make it more understandable for the parents? I mean, I wouldn't want to send my kid to a school where I couldn't understand where the educational level was.
You know, it's a puzzle to me. I would think that it's in part, for some reason, they have a problem saying that this is an F school or an F school district. But it is important to have that information because you need transparency in order to hold our schools and school districts accountable. It's been a very interesting project for us because the first year we got calls from some superintendents who were very pleased about how well their school districts did. And, you know, we had that little thing called COVID,
right,
which actually impacted the performance of a lot of our school districts.
Very much.
And then we had those same superintendents who were so happy when we originally issued it, getting very upset because our data showed that their schools had declined in performance. And performance is a way that you can measure how your children are doing and what you need to do to help them. And so we believe these most school rankings are very important. The reason we include financial data is because you're going to be surprised. A lot of people think, oh, for our public schools, we only spend, you know, $6,000 maybe per student. No, you're going to find we average around $15,000. There's some school districts that are paying far in excess of that amount. And I think as taxpayers and as parents, we may well ask, are we getting value for our money? And that's an important thing for us to look at. And it also gives us a roadmap into what these school districts are spending their money on. Our website is one where it's only public schools. So it'd be charter schools, public schools, not private schools, because their data doesn't have to be available. But we also put all of the backup for our data so you can download it. We're not making this up. We're getting it from the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education.
Transparency is on your website.
That's right.
And the website, again, is called?
For the schools and school district rankings, it's moschoolsrankings.org, moschoolrankings.org, O-R-G. And if you go to our website, showmeinstitute.org, you can also link to it through there.
So what about the scholarship programs? Are those available to students everywhere? I've heard that they're giving $50 million in the state budget to expand the Mo Scholarship programs. Who gets that credit?
Well, let me backtrack a little bit. Mo Scholars is one of the programs that we're very pleased with because we've been working for a number of years to try to create a scholarship that would be available where the parents could use it for children who really need other options for their education. When it was first enacted, it's a tax credit scholarship program. So in other words, the way it was first envisioned was that you could give money to an education organization that could award a scholarship and you would get a tax credit for what you gave to that organization up to 50% of your Missouri tax liability.
Okay.
I know I'm getting in the weeds here. And then those scholarship programs could award scholarships to individuals who applied. At the time it was first created, it was limited to our largest populated counties and cities, so you had to have 30,000 or more, and it was for low-income or children with special needs. Well, we've expanded the program, and now the program applies statewide. It applies to anyone who's at 300% of the poverty level, so that effectively makes it available or makes about 80% of our students eligible to apply for the scholarship.
80%?
Right. The problem is that it's still capped. It was capped at $50 million, then it's capped at $75 million, and the education organizations have to raise the money for these scholarships through these tax credits. So they were not anywhere close to the cap on it. And we were very pleased to see our Missouri legislature decide that they were going to put $50 million into the program, which when you look at other states, this is what you see other states doing. In fact, there are states that are providing that money follows the child. And So the public money is just following the child wherever the parent wants to take them.
See, that's so important. I know that having a disability is a challenge, and you have to spend more money on helping those kids and helping get good quality teachers who won't enable them, but they will help them grow to their highest potential. So that's so important to have that money, and for paying for equipment like screen reader equipment and wheelchair equipment, et cetera. So talk about how parents can find out more about the programs where they can get their child the education they need with the equipment they need.
Well, the Most Scholars Program, the Missouri Treasurer's website has a lot of information about that, because where the tax credit program, you go through that, they list all of the education organizations mm-hmm. that are awarding scholarships. Then as a parent, you could reach out to one of those organizations if you want to apply for a scholarship. I want to say there are six of them now. I don't know the names of all of them off the top of my head. But for example, there's the Herzog Foundation in the Kansas City area. There's Today and Tomorrow in the St. Louis area. But there are others. And so you can apply. And as I say, the unfortunate part is we don't have enough funds available through these scholarships to fund all the students who might well want to apply for them. And that's one of the limitations that we hope to see more public money go into this. Because, you know, when we talk about allowing parents to determine the best education for their child, it's not only about performance, you know, that they can read and they know math. It also can be they just don't fit into their school,
right,
that there's
right.
bullying, or they don't fit in with the other kids. And so there are a lot of different things where parents are looking for other options. And one of the things that, you know, our research, which we publish, shows is that other states are being far more aggressive than we are. We're very pleased with some of the strides we made, but we still have a long way to go. For example, we only have charter schools effectively in St. Louis and Kansas City. They now can be in Boone County, but that's because there was a legislative change last year. If you look at other states, they have charter schools all throughout their states, rural areas, urban areas, suburban areas. In Missouri, unfortunately, we viewed it almost as a punishment, and that's why you see it in St. Louis City and Kansas City, and you don't really see it in other
in the rural area
part of the states. Well, we require school districts to sponsor them, and they won't, because they view them as competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Other states have open enrollment, which means you don't have to go to your zip code school. If there are seats available in other public schools, you can apply to go to those. And then, of course, as they say, money follow the child. And in Missouri, we do talk about the need to really teach our kids to read. Our trend lines are going the wrong way. And right now, what we're talking about is the Mississippi miracle. Mississippi used to be the bottom in reading at fourth grade. Mississippi has turned that around. They used to be 49th. Now they're like ninth.
Wow, and how did they get there?
What they did was they made a commitment that kids leaving third grade have to read. And what did they do? They required that they teach phonics and that they not be promoted unless they could read. And they carved out some exceptions, because we know there's always some kids who just won't fit into that. But what they saw was they just shot up in the rankings. Louisiana's doing the same thing. In Missouri, we talk about, phonics should be the primary method, but we do not require it, and we still allow what's called 3Q-ing, which is word association, which is proven not to help kids mm-hmm. learn to read. And we say we have a retention program, but we never do. So we continue to socially promote kids who can't read, and we're doing a disservice to those kids, because what we say is for third grade, you need to learn to read. When you get into fourth grade, you can read yeah. to learn.
So what are the statistics on Missouri readers?
Right now, for 2024, only 20% of our fourth graders are proficient in reading, and only 28% of eighth graders can read at the proficient level or higher. When you look at other, and this is from the national test, which is called the National Assessment of Education Progress, also called the Nation's Report Card, even when you look at Missouri's test, which is an easier test, you still find a significant number of students, 40%, who are below basic, which means effectively they're not literate. These are very troubling numbers when you look at them. What you see in other states where they are really turning that trend line around to increase the ability of their kids to read, what you see is a real commitment, a real dedication, and real leadership, which is saying, you know what? I'm willing to commit to say we're going to teach our third graders to read. And I just haven't heard that in our state.
So how can we report that so it can be heard?
I think parents and taxpayers need to be very vocal about it. Parents saying, I want my children to read, and taxpayers saying, you know, we're paying all of this money into our school system. Make the commitment that you're going to teach kids to read. And that means you are going to teach phonics, you aren't going to promote them, and you're going to really come around them with robust programs so that we know that they can read by the time they reach fourth grade.
Now, the parochial schools, can they get some of this educational choice money as well?
Through the scholarship, the Most Scholars Program, they certainly can, because the parents and the decide where that money goes if they get a scholarship. You can go to private school, you can go to parochial school, you can use it for tutors. It has very broad uses available to it.
And what's the website for that?
You can go to the treasurer's website in order to learn about the Most Scholars Program and to learn about applying for one of the scholarships through one of the education organizations.
And your website again, Brenda?
ShowMeInstitute.org.
ShowMeInstitute.org. Brenda Talent has been my guest, and I am so grateful that you came today. She is the Chief Executive Officer of the Show Me Institute. Look up that website. Follow some of the links on it. You'll be surprised at what you learn, but you can get involved as a parent to make life better for not only your child or grandchild, but for others all over the state of Missouri. Brenda, thanks for joining us today on Encounter.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Encounter with Judy Redlich, informing listeners on local Christian events and matters that affect your lives. Spread the word and invite people to listen to Encounter on KSIV or online at botradionetwork.com.
Check out more of Judy's interviews at judyredlich.com. That's JUDYREDLICH.com. Or email her at judyredlichspeaks@gmail.com. Friend her on Facebook, connect with her on LinkedIn. And if you want to learn how your business could be a sponsor on Judy Redlich's website, email her at jredlichspeaks@gmail.com.